With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and delighted to be at a beautiful place in the West Gloucester area on a beautiful summer day, talking with Dr. Mary Ellen Rose, who is a candidate for mayor in Gloucester. And Dr. Rose, thank you for inviting me to this beautiful place.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so pleased to have this time together.
The Rose family takes up a good portion of West Gloucester, and they're well known in the city for various things, including community service and sports and so on. And before we get to how and why you want to do what you want to do, tell me a little bit about your background, your experience maybe, your schooling and that kind of thing.
Okay, sure. So I graduated from Gloucester High School. I went to school in Texas at Southern Methodist University.
Ooh, the real SMU.
The real SMU.
Yes.
And I was actually referred there by Shirley Cohen for a leadership scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down there and spent 4 years, got 2 degrees, a BS in sociology and a BA in phys ed and education, primarily health. And then I got a full ride to Baylor University, where I got my master's degree.
Yeah, these are schools familiar to me. Yeah,
yeah, good schools, really good schools.
Yep.
But I wasn't a big fan of living down there. I missed the ocean.
Right.
So I ended up in Maryland, followed a boy to Maryland, and consequently ended up staying there for the next 40 years, practically. So I had a number of jobs. I've taught every grade from kindergarten through graduate school in public and private schools. I have consulted to the federal government and to private industry. My very last job was with the Veterans Administration, reporting to the Director of Population Health and answering executive orders from President Biden on what happened during COVID,
mm-hmm.
and what did we do well and what didn't we do well, as well as looking at the global, at that time, the new phenomenon called long COVID, seeing what that was all about. And before that, I worked with the Defense Health Agency, which is oversees all of the health for the Department of Defense over the entire world, and working with them on specific issues to make their healthcare more efficient and effective. And before that, I worked as the Director of Wellness and Health for the Department of State. So that's my last probably 5 or 6 years.
Okay, so you bring that. Let's bring that down from a national, global perspective down to the local. What is it about running for public office that you see yourself? What motivated you, or is motivating you to do this? It's difficult. Public service is just difficult. So, why do you want to do this?
Well, I've always been in public service, just not as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved back up to Gloucester, I was offered the job from the Board of Health to be the director for the health department here in Gloucester. And I was charged with making sense from a chaotic department at the time. That was their words, not mine. And I went in and I did what needed to be done. And 5 months later, I was unceremoniously dismissed from that job, and without cause. And I just realized that being on the inside of government like that, it gives you a different perspective of how systems work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little bit frustrated. So I walked away and decided, fine, I'll just go on back to my consulting work. And then I realized, you know, you can't learn what you learn and then walk away and just be the same person. And I wanted to make a change in how systems work, and I felt as though I have all of this experience and knowledge globally as well as nationally, and it just seemed unfair and not right to not expend it on a city that I love.
Mm-hmm.
So I threw my hat into the ring for mayor, because I feel like I shouldn't have all this talent and not share it with others.
I want to get to some of the issues that you may see, but a question that's always bothered me, and I've asked every candidate who runs for mayor, wherever it is the staffing in a mayor's office, the staffing in government. How do you get the people that you want to do the job, to do the job, or to get the job? In other words, when you're going in, you must have a vision of certain jobs that could be filled by certain people that you might know. How does that work?
I think the amazing part of that is you look for people like myself who have experience and that are willing to take a job that that they can do very well. But when you bring them in, you have to realize that that you may not necessarily agree with the method that they do things. I was very much a 100 miles an hour kind of person. I came in, I assessed the department very quickly. I met with every single employee. I flattened the reporting line so that everyone reported to me so that I could take full responsibility and accountability for what was happening in the department. And I went on each job so that I could quickly become familiar with the jobs that were part of the department, what our requirements were. And then I set about systematically making improvements in the department. And eventually that leaks out into the larger structure of how the city is run. And at that area where the two, let's say, two bodies of water meet, where my department meets the city structure, all of a sudden things were a little bit more muddy. And I don't know if toes get stepped on or what that is, but when you have people that have capabilities, you need to, I believe, let them do their job and oversee what they're doing to make them the best person they can be. And that's what I did with my department, and that's what I expected from the city. And unfortunately, that's not what the outcome was. So, in reality, and you see it in federal government all the time, you have people that are really good at their jobs, and for whatever reason, they're held back or they're squelched because of whether it's a threat or a personality conflict. You never know what it is. You just see that disruption of a process that seems to be working until it no longer is.
Before we get to issues and problem solving, in my experience doing this since for so many years on the radio station with MSO, whenever we talk with mayors, especially mayoral candidates, there is a specific, for want of a better word, love for the community they're in. And I have certainly found that here in Gloucester. And it seems to me the Rose family is certainly firmly ensconced in the history of Gloucester. So that passion, the love of Gloucester, how do you see that fitting into your daily routine as you go to work? Because I know one thing about the big office is you got a plan, you've got your agenda, then you get to work and it all changes.
Right. Yeah, well, I knew when I was in high school that the only way I could come back and serve this city the way I wanted to was to go out and enlarge my world. I knew I needed an education, and I knew I needed experiences beyond what New England could offer. And I was very fortunate to have those experiences. Every time I came back to this city prepared to go to work for this city in a more formal role, I found myself questioning whether or not I was ready to attack or to tackle the culture here, where it's not an old boys network. It is just simply an entrenched, we're not going to change anything network. And you need to have change, absolutely, because the world is changing around you. But what I've learned over all these years is you change systematically within the confines of the culture that exists. Because if you change without taking everything into consideration, inevitably the shifts cause a disruption in the universe, and people around here like the consistency of Gloucester. They love the beauty and the commonality of everyone working together for the common good. And Gloucester's always been that way. When my dad was a fisherman, you know, they're out at sea for 2 weeks at a time. You survive by relying on one another. And the city is full of people who understand that concept. And although we're starting to change, there are plenty of residents who's still here and believe in that. And it's frightening to see so many new people come in and look at this city as nothing more than an investment for a portfolio. People that come in and just buy a property and then immediately rent it, they have no vested interest in this city. And that is never good for a community, especially a community like Gloucester.
All right, so let's get to some issues and some problem solving about those issues.
So looking at that, clearly one person cannot solve everything. And I feel as though, and what I've watched in this very short amount of time of being home, is the progressive silencing of the community's voice. And silencing in that if you watch a city council meeting, especially with Zoom, you should always be able to see all of the people that are on that Zoom meeting. I've been in meetings globally, hundreds of people, and I could scroll through and see who was attending meeting. I could also have a chat in the sidebar so that people's voices could be heard by all those attending a meeting. The intention of Zoom is to recreate an in-person environment as closely as possible. We don't, for some reason, do that in this city, and I can't help but wonder why. And then when people are allowed to talk, because you have to follow Robert's Rules of Order, when they are allowed to talk, they're either cut off or they're incredibly and arrogantly mocked, whether directly or overtly. And it's very discouraging if you are willing to speak up and then the response you get is negative or shaming or belittling. It's not only you that's impacted for speaking, it is all of those around you that are watching that behavior transpire. And then other people stop coming forward because they think, you know what, I'm not going to get involved in this because they're clearly not listening. I don't have a voice. What's the point? But here's something that I just noticed this week. I went to the movie The Sound of Freedom. And in an opening scene, it's all about human trafficking. It's a devastating international problem. And in the opening scene, you have a father and two children and a very credible woman coming with a brochure that says, "We want to get your daughter into the entertainment industry." And this daughter's excited. She's an 8-year-old girl and they say, "Oh, bring your little brother too. We're having interviews for the children." And the father shows up. He was clearly a single parent, shows up with his two children at this hotel, and the woman is there. She greets him and she brings the children into the room, and then the father starts to follow the children, and she says, no stage parents here. And the father, not knowing any better, falls back. She says, "Come back at 7. So he does. And when he comes back, of course, the children are gone. And it's the entire objective behind the organization, that is to find these stolen children. And I was thinking, that is exactly what is happening in Gloucester. We have people that seem credible saying, "Come build, help us build this, whether it's a strip mall or increase your housing or let's do more affordable housing. Let's do all these things. Let's save this green space and we're going to do it this way. Come into this door." And then all of those people that are saying, well, wait a minute, I want to check on that. They say, no, there's no room for you in this room. You come back at 7. And the door gets closed, and when it's open, when you come back at 7, it's gone. All of those things have evolved, and you have no say in it anymore, whether it's because of Robert's Rules of Order or the regulation affiliated with that decision. You have no say. And that is what's happening. Gloucester residents are the people that are in that room trusting the system to take care of them, and suddenly they are swept away and in a situation that they're not at all happy with. And it through no fault of their own.
Oh, well, that's pretty scary stuff. What about in terms of, everyday stuff? There's a lot of road repair going on right now in Gloucester. As you mentioned, there's a lot of people coming in building stuff, But in terms of budget and that kind of thing, how do you see the city progressing? I know that I guess there's a move afoot to put together a 5 or 10 year plan or something like that, and it seems to me that should have already been done, constantly. So what's the overall view on how you think you'd look at things citywide?
So the comprehensive plan was done 20 years ago, and it should be reviewed constantly. However, it hasn't been. So it is being reviewed now. However, it's being reviewed under a very short window. The last one took 2 years and had hundreds, evidently, of people giving their input. This window is coming in from an outside consultant who has to first get to know the community, which to me, there's the first thing that's wrong. The consultant's coming in and doesn't even know the community. So once again, we're trusting this outside resource to do something that is going to affect all of us. Mm-hmm. Second of all, it's too short of an amount of time. And of course, it's an election period, so this could be pushed through just like our federal government does before anyone has a chance to give a new mayor an opportunity to say, "Hey, hang on, let's take a look at this." But more importantly, what I'm looking at as a mayor candidate is four areas of interest that I really want to attack. The first being a suitable and sustainable infrastructure. There are people, you mentioned potholes, there are people all over the city that have very simple needs, a road that is passable for community traffic as well as emergency vehicles that are not being maintained. Water levels that are coming into the homes that provide clean water and at a water pressure that is reasonable to use. I mean, electricity that is, again, the power that we need and sustainable and efficient. Even our technology capability. We have limited technology capability, and that's all understandable, and those are huge, big world problems. But you start with what do we have, what do we need, and then we move forward from there. We don't plan for big initiatives, and then after we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars with a consultant to create something wonderful and new, and then say, oh, but we can't implement it because we don't have the infrastructure. That is backwards. So that's the first area, is the sustainable infrastructure. The second is economic development, strong economic development, which means creating an economic environment for this city where we're encouraging businesses, not a punitive approach to businesses, which seems to be the rule of thumb around here from what I've heard from business owners, but an environment where businesses are encouraged to excel and to expand, where new entrepreneurs are encouraged to put their foot in the ring and try. And also, it's not just for businesses, it's for individuals. If I don't have economic strength as an individual, I can't possibly stay here. So how do I, as an individual, manage the money that I have within the confines of whatever my limitations are? So teaching money management, helping people to understand, you were a math teacher, helping people to understand simple concepts of lifestyle math so that they can live within the means that they have. And we have the ability to do those educational systems, I mean, and processes and courses or whatever. So then the third is community engagement. And that relies on people having access to the information. People are busy just making a living and taking care of their families. They don't have time to follow the complexity of government. So it's imperative that the government, the city government, make everything so clear and plain that you can find it easily or look for that information one or two clicks into a system. There's no reason for the lack of transparency that is happening. I don't understand it. I know it was one of the initiatives that was put forth by this new administration. However, everyone that I'm speaking to is frustrated with the lack of transparency. There's no reason for that other than I don't want you to know what we're doing until it's too late for you to have a say. I experienced that as the director of the health department, so I know it exists as a fact. And then the fourth area is, you're going to love this, it's education excellence. It's because we talked about this before we started the interview. Yeah. So as an educator, I believe in education excellence. I believe in you get what you expect. If I expect excellence from my students, I get that. If I expect excellence from our teachers, we get that. If I expect excellence from my administration, you get that. I realize there are restrictions in what teachers can teach that are handed down from the state as well as federal levels, but I also know the authority and power of principals and a superintendent over the way things are taught. And there has to be some area in there for flexibility. The teachers that we have that love teaching don't want to leave this school, this system, or this area. We need to make that a possibility for them to stay. And if we discourage them or if we're not providing a system where they want to stay, we're going to lose them the same way we're losing students to opting out to other areas, either private schools or other public schools. It's unconscionable that we are denying our children a right to learn in an environment that best suits them. When I was in graduate school and I learned pedagogy for the first time during my PhD work, I realized we actually have structures to teach every student to their capabilities of learning. And because I was always in the health sciences, I never knew that. And so I wondered, why on earth are we still using systems that are antiquated to teach children who are now shorter attention span, technology-based, and need to learn faster than ever? There are new ways to teach, and the students can actually lead that in some ways. I talked to Phil Salzman he was my social studies teacher at Fuller at the time, and he was telling me how excited he was as a teacher to, I mean, I remember he was a fantastic teacher to make learning come alive, and he wanted to come back and help as a mentor in this system. Mm-hmm. And I believe that opportunity wasn't allowed, but and you should ask him, because I don't want to just throw his name out there, other than to say I loved him as a teacher. And as I told you earlier, Ginny Mosiri changed my life in elementary school. Teachers change your life for the better or for the worse. And I know as a teacher, that's a huge responsibility, as you know.
I know both of them very well, and they are great teachers. This has been very informative to me. Is there anything else you'd like to mention before we wrap this up?
I want to stay really positive. So I know that I started, I'm trying to remember how we started this conversation, and I don't want to imply that that I'm only looking at things that need to change. There are a lot of really good things about this city, one of them being the population here. There are a lot of very smart, capable, blue-collar, white-collar, pink-collar workers in this city. And I think that we are in a great place to tap into those resources, whether it's institutional knowledge for people having been in a job forever and can come back and consult, or it's new people coming up and having to learn the job but bring fresh ideas and perspective. I think that we're missing out by not tapping into our people enough.
It's Dr. Mary Ellen Rose, candidate for mayor in the city of Gloucester with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.